Each event is unique. There is no repetition. There is no return. There is a going on, a kind of a linear, not maybe exactly linear, but by contrast with the cyclical, a linear movement, no repetition. Each person, each event is unique. Abraham lived one time, he hasn't lived again. The Israelites were at Sinai. They're not doing it over again. There was a crucifixion. It's not happening again. It happened once. Time is real. Changes are real. The movement is real. Events move forward in time. They do not recur. I don't mean to suggest progress. That's not a biblical conception. There's no idea of progress here. One period of time may be worse than the previous period of time. It needn't be an improvement. There's a lot of apocalyptic thinking. As a matter of fact, that times may get worse than they ever were before the coming of the Messiah or the second coming of the Christ. Whichever way one sees it. So the idea of progress is not a biblical conception. I want to remove it here. We'll come to that when we talk about the 18th century, because that's when progress was taken over in a serious way. Yes? Would you? I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. That's not a cycle. It's a continuation, but not a cycle. It's not a repetition. The second coming is not the first coming done over again. It's a different kind of a coming. And the world will be quite different after the second coming than it was after the first coming. There's no repetition there. Yes? What was that? I don't understand. I'm sorry, but before you leave, like, I want to answer it. What are you saying to me? That's right. Yes? There are no cycles, no. Well, you better, you'd be the only one who would attribute to the Bible the cyclical idea. Nobody does that. It isn't there. What? Cycles? No. I'd like to know who they are. Is there any particular time by what? Yes. Well, there have been people who have counted the years back to the days of creation, but one doesn't have to accept that. This is just a... Because we don't know whether the years were in the Bible are meant in the same sense in which we use the term year. So, this has nothing to do with what I'm trying to get at. You know. Well, we don't know for sure, but there is a mountain in the wilderness of Sinai, which is said to be Mount Sinai. I was there a few years ago. Oh, one can get there. There is a monastery, Santa Caterina, a very famous monastery with one of the world's great libraries, located there, and it's and the world's best museum of iconography. It's located in no man's land. It's a wilderness. It's a desert. Oh, but there it is, and this is said to be, by tradition, to have been the mountain, which was Mount Sinai. What? If you want to go to what is said to be Mount Sinai, you can go there. That's what I'm saying to you. There is, but it's a tradition. The Bible doesn't give you by meets and bounds, latitude and so on, where Mount Sinai is located. So a lot of things in the Bible have to be understood only in terms of a continuing tradition. There has been a tradition that this mountain is Mount Sinai. Well, what about it anyway? What? Well, I can't go into that. I don't. One is free to speculate about these things. I've answered you as honestly as I can, that there is a tradition which has been maintained by the church that X marks the spot where, you know, where there was the revelation. I wasn't there. But you can believe that it was in Africa. I have no objection to that. Why? I'm sorry, but I can't hear you. But it's been proven to your satisfaction. I'm not going to disturb your belief. You can accept that belief, but. Yeah, but why should I get off on that subject? Would you mind telling me? It has nothing to do with what I'm trying to do with the meaning of the significance of this element of a sense of time and a sense of history. So it's not relevant at all to the point I am making where the Exodus took place. It has absolutely no bearing on my subject. But you're free to believe. A lot of things that I don't go into. And you know that there are literally thousands of Christian sects and denominations. There aren't that many Jewish sects and denominations, but there are quite a number of them. And every sect, every denomination has its own interpretation, its own commentaries on the Bible. This isn't going to be changed by anything that I say, but obviously I can't get into the different interpretations of every point. Every time I open my mouth and say something, I can't begin to interpret it from the point of view of such a sect and such a denomination and so on. I couldn't get beyond the first sentence if I were to do that. Well, what do you mean by anyway? I've tried to answer you as well as I can. Yes? Well, the student says it's still obvious to him that there are two cycles. Why don't you do that after class? And then if you make a point that I think I ought to share with the class, I'll be glad to share it with you. May I say something on this subject? Now look, let's be relaxed just a minute. I can only be guided in my lectures by what I consider to be the responsibility of a scholar. This doesn't mean that what I say, again, I've said this before, let me say it again, that what I say is necessarily the truth, the fact, I am not standing now at the foot of Mount Sinai and making a revelation. But I am trying to say what I know, and I cannot be gotten to say what I don't know. Now, the time may come when X or Y or Z sitting in the classroom will himself be a professor or a teacher. That person, if he's going to talk about the subject, will present the subject from his point of view. You'll have that opportunity. It so happens that this is my chance to do it. I've got to present it as I see it. As I see it, no responsible scholar has attributed to biblical thought the idea of cyclical time or cyclical history. I'm not going to go into the evidence, because if I do, I would make a seminar out of just this point. I have other things to do. So some things I simply have to state on the basis of what I believe, on the basis of the evidence that I have examined. Now, I can't lecture in any other way, because as I said, on every point that I mention, I haven't any doubt but that you can find people who've said the opposite. So on this point, I've never come across anybody who has said the opposite. But maybe there are people who do. Well, you can see what I'm up against. So, it's not... Oh, this... I don't blame the students. I have respect for them, and I'm glad they ask. But by the same token, I think that they ought to try to respect me, and glad that I've answered the way I've answered. You don't have to accept what I've said, but this is a give and take. Now, I did say that the biblical point of view with respect to time and history, to which I'll return later, was unique in the ancient world. I can't go into the whole ancient world, but I want to contrast the biblical approach with the Greek and with the Indian, simply by way of pointing up the importance of the distinction between the so-called linear representation of time and history, which is biblical, and the cyclical, which is that one finds in other cultures. Now, first, with respect to the Greeks, who held on the whole to the cyclical view. For example, Parmenides said, "It is all one to me where I begin, for I shall come back again there." Empedocles believed in the transmigration of souls. He believed in cyclical time, and that souls return to the earth, enter into other bodies, and upon death, the soul leaves and enters into still another body, and so it goes on. He argued that one ought to be a vegetarian. He was a vegetarian, because the animal that he would be eating might be that of a friend, might be or a relative. Souls have a way of taking possession of the bodies of other living creatures. He believed that a cycle takes approximately 30,000 years. He figured it out on the basis of some reckonings. The Pythagoreans argued that the identical man returns, that man is on a cycle and the time repeats itself with the same events. A philosopher by the name of Eudemus in the 4th century BC put it this way: if one may believe the Pythagoreans, then someday I myself, with this staff in my hand, shall talk to you who will sit in front of me, just as you are sitting now, and the same will be true of everything else. Plato in the Phaedrus said that a cycle lasts 10,000 years. The Stoics, whom we'll discuss in due course, held to the cyclical view. For example, Chrysippus in the 3rd century BC said, Socrates and Plato will exist again, and every man and his friends and his fellow citizens. He will suffer the same and do the same. Every city, every village, and every field will grow again. And this restoration will not happen once, but the same will return without limit and without end. There were Greek historians like Herodotus and Thucydides and Polybius, mainly those three. And they were not interested in the movement of events in the way in which a modern historian is, but their interest was in recurrent patterns, in the universal or permanent laws of society, social laws, sociological laws. They were pioneers of what today we would call social science rather than history. And this was especially true of Thucydides and Polybius. Thucydides said that he wished that his work would be studied by the future generations because history repeats itself. And if one were to study history, one would know what was coming. Polybius, who was a Greek, but who wrote Roman history in the 2nd century BC, believed in cycles, after describing the way the Roman democracy degenerated into a rule by mob and despots, he said, and I'm quoting, "This is the regular cycle of constitutional revolutions and the natural order in which constitutions change, are transformed, and return again to their original stage." Well, this is like a political scientist who wants to apply social science to political thought would write today. "If a man have a clear grasp of these principles, he may perhaps make a mistake as to the dates at which this or that will happen to a particular constitution. But if he judges without animosity or jealousy, he will rarely be mistaken as to the stage of growth or decay at which it has arrived or as to the form into which it will change." This was exactly the method of Thucydides in the 5th century BC. This was less true of Herodotus, who might be classified with some charity as truly a historian, but he was unique in Greek thought, and he left no followers. So he was a kind of a special phenomenon. I'm sorry that our time is up, but I'll try to continue this on Wednesday.